It's almost the end of the sweaty summer, which means it's time for Pop Culture Happy Hour's Fall TV Preview.
We are telling you what new shows we're excited about and which ones we think are built to last. I'm Stephen Thompson.
And I'm Linda Holmes. Here with me and Stephen in the studio is Glenn Weldon of NPR's Arts Desk. Hey, Glenn.
Hey, Linda.
And in our fourth chair, who better for a Fall TV Preview than NPR's TV critic, Eric Deggans. Hi, Eric.
The only other person at NPR whose job is to slog through all of this stuff.
Oh, man. It is getting to be a slog, is it not?
Oh, my God.
We're going to get into it. But the first thing that we're going to do, we're going to talk about the things that are upcoming this fall. And we defined that to be September, October, November that we are excited to see. I'm going to start with Glenn, who made, to me, a shocking choice.
Okay. All right. It is Netflix's Dancing Queen, a reality series following Alyssa Edwards from season 5 of RuPaul's Drag Race and All Stars 2. We follow her as she runs a dance studio in Mesquite, Texas. Now, whatever you think of Alyssa Edwards, she may or may not be your favorite, and we can talk long and hard about whether or not she should be the first queen to come out of that show to have a reality series that follows her life out of all the people you could have picked, but she's funny. She's smart-ish. she is fabulous. She is a tongue-popping catchphrase engine. You can't deny that. She's a living meme. So who better, I guess. Now, she is a lot, which is part of the deal with queens, of course. So if nothing else, this show is going to give us some sense of how you fit all of that into Mesquite, Texas. I'm a little worried, however, because as much as I love RuPaul's Drag Race, I do not love Dance Moms. And this show seems to have a hell of a lot of Dance Moms in its DNA.
Yeah.
Her doing screaming matches with stage mothers, no thank you, ma'am. It's also pitched as all tears, all shade, which, you know, not my thing. But anyway, I'm going to watch Dancing Queen on Netflix.
Yeah. Let me ask you, do you find it interesting that it's on Netflix? Because I don't think of reality shows of this kind follow a person's private life as Netflix's domain. What about you, Eric? Does that seem surprising to you?
Well, it is the one kind of TV programming that Netflix doesn't dominate,
right?
I mean, they're trying to be all things to all people. They want you to come to Netflix and never leave. So, you know, to be fair, you know, you look at a show like Queer Eye, for example, and see how successful that's been.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It makes sense that they would try to expand on that and see what different kinds of TV programming they could push out at people that they haven't done before. So this makes a lot of sense to me, actually.
Yeah, that makes sense to me, too, now that you explain it that way. Well, Eric, your pick is also from Netflix. What did you pick?
I picked The Kominsky Method. Now, if somebody would have told me a year ago, the show that you're most excited to see this fall is a Chuck Lorre comedy, I would have kicked them in this you-know-where.
Chuck Lorre, who has been the man behind not only The Big Bang Theory, but also Two and a Half Men and many, many, many other things. Some, I would argue, good and some not so good.
Yeah, some good, some really bad. He's the king of the broad multi-camera comedy on television. And he's created certainly some of the most watched shows on television, including Big Bang Theory and Two and a Half Men. But this is not that. You know, this is a dramedy about getting older as a man in society. It stars Michael Douglas as this respected acting teacher who's sort of trying to cope with aging. And he's also trying to help his best friend, Alan Arkin, who's suffering a tremendous loss in his life. These guys have been friends for 40 years, and he's trying to help them through it. And there's enough Chuck Lorre kind of smart alecky humor in it to make it interesting, but there's a lot of drama there for these two guys, especially somebody like Alan Arkin, who can be funny and be serious and do both really well. And, you know, maybe it's just because I'm a man of a certain age these days, but it's really cool to see a TV show about getting older that isn't like this one that's going to be on Fox called The Cool Kids, where it's all older people cracking jokes about taking prescription drugs and alcohol and, you know, acting like frat boys out on a bender, only they're 70, you know? So at least this is a show.
I should clarify, I groaned there and I haven't even watched it yet. But when they did the panel for it.
If you've seen the trailer, and I'm sure you probably have, that's all you need to see. But Kominsky Method is, you know, it's a single camera. It's Chuck Lorre doing something very personal. He took a long time to write this. You know, I talked with him a little bit about it in LA in July. It's very good. I was surprised at how much I liked it. And again, it may be because it's sort of, you know, where my life is now myself, even though these characters are older, they're in their 70s and 80s. But it is great to see television tackle something like this with a guy who's not known for being subtle and being mature, but he really pulls it off.
Yeah. Steven, you're a man of a certain age.
Wow.
I appreciate that segue, Linda. Thank you. I was really hoping
that was sort of, was that backhanded? Was that front-handed?
That was front-handed. Yeah. That was a spike.
No.
Steven, you're pretty old.
Well, let me say that again louder. Steven.
My other choice was, Steven, you're next. And that's not interesting at all. So I figured, all right, Steven, you are next. And I have to say, before we go to this pick, Steven is also a Netflix show.
We
did not set out to be quite this
Netflix-y.
But as Eric and I were saying at the beginning, particularly the stuff in the fall, it's hard to find broadcast stuff to be excited about. There are a few things for mid-season that I'm excited about, but for fall, boy.
Yeah, and I really struggled. I mean, when I was looking over kind of a list of shows that were coming out, I kind of came down to two, and then I'm like, man, I got to pick the one that isn't Netflix, and then I realized they were both Netflix.
Yeah.
Because I thought about doing that Hasan Minhaj talk show, because I like him so much. Mm-hmm. It's on Netflix. Yeah. So I just went with a really ambitious-looking show called Maniac. It drops September 21st on Netflix. This show has two immediately obvious things going for it when you watch the trailer. It has incredible-looking visual effects, and it has pedigree. Mm-hmm. Pedigree. It is directed by Kerry Joji Fukunaga, who did Beasts of No Nation, which was very acclaimed, also for Netflix. Then you look at this cast. Emma Stone and Jonah Hill are your leads. Your supporting cast includes Justin Theroux and Sally Field and Sonoya Mizuno in some pretty impressive wigs.
Yeah.
But it is...
Oh, you got me now. The Americans is off the air, I need my wig fits.
Exactly. And there's been a lot of mystery surrounding this show as it's been in development. They have kept very tight-lipped about what this show is about. It is based on a Norwegian show also called Maniac that is set in a mental facility. The plot that Netflix has given people is, and I quote, "Maniac is the story of two strangers who find themselves caught up in a mind-bending pharmaceutical trial gone awry." Mm.
Yeah, and I genuinely don't know much more than that. Do you know much more than that, Eric?
No, but they just released review copies of the show to us over the weekend.
Yeah.
So I plan to immerse myself in Maniac very soon.
The trailer has a very strong Michel Gondry vibe.
Yes.
Particularly Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. A lot of that.
And I am such a sucker for that vibe, which is one reason that I'm excited about this show. Mm-hmm. Clearly, it is going for a lot of what is reality, what is in these people's heads. It looks twisty and mind-bendy, and I look forward to getting lost in it.
Very nice, Steven. I like that pick. I'm excited about that, too. But I did not pick a Netflix show.
Bless your heart.
I stepped out of Netflix. I'm punishing them for Insatiable. Not really. I could, though. But I chose a show that's coming to the CW called All American. And All American is a high school football show. And unlike Friday Night Lights, which people would always tell you it's not about football, this show, I think, sort of in the early going, is about football.
Yeah.
But because it's about a particular kid coming to a team in Beverly Hills High School. And I don't know whether it's actually Beverly Hills High School or a high school in Beverly Hills, but he has been at a high school in Compton, but he is recruited by Taye Diggs, playing a Beverly Hills football coach, who can bring him over on a kind of a transfer permit, they call it, so that he can play in Beverly Hills. And the whole idea is he goes to this place where these kids are rich and, you know, he doesn't feel totally comfortable and that it's a matter of fitting in. And then he has to actually move in with the coach and the coach's family to maintain his eligibility in Beverly Hills. Now, let me say, this show has a serious case of pilotitis the pilot. There is a ton of explaining what is going on. It also has a certain amount of corniness and, corniness, yes. Mm-hmm. It has some corniness, and it also has some effortful work to establish how interesting its point of view is going to be. When this kid is in the high school that's his actual neighborhood school, he's with his friend walking down the hallway and actually says, "What's with white people and mayonnaise?" Which I understand what they're going for, but it's a little on the nose in terms of, you know,
we're gonna
get into his thinking about white people and mayonnaise. I mean, it's just a little on the nose, but I didn't like the pilot of Friday Night Lights either.
I was going to say, I remember that.
It's not going to be Friday Night Lights. Please do not quote me saying it's going to be Friday Night Lights. But I do think it has a very charismatic cast. And I think some of the ideas potentially for the CW, which tries to make kind of at least moderately interesting broadcast television most of the time.
Our bar is so low.
Some of those shows are great.
I just want to point out that Eric's not in studio. I just heard him laughing. The bar is really low. And some of the shows are great, right? Jane the Virgin's great. Crazy Ex-Girlfriend is great. I think it might be fun.
This is based on a true story, right?
Yes, it is based on
Spencer Paisinger?
Yes, it is based on a real NFL player and his experiences. Thank you for mentioning that. So we'll see. I have absolutely no idea what to expect, but shows like this always have pilotitis, so you have to kind of make a gamble.
Well, they're often the pilot is made separately from the rest of the season.
Yeah, I mean, and it takes a while for them to decide they don't have to try so hard.
What I would say about this, you know, if people said Friday Night Lights isn't about football, this is about code switching. This is about the idea that you grow up in one culture and then you have to learn how to operate in another. Now, I love that idea, and I love the performers, but it felt old school to me. It felt like a show you would do 10 years ago. What I would say is there's a better show about that called America to Me, a docuseries on Stars that really shows like what kids of color deal with when they're in an environment where they're around middle class and upper class kids and outnumbered by white people. This show felt a little old school to me, and I'm just hoping that they figure out a way to kind of modernize the issues that they're grappling with so it doesn't feel so much like they're talking about a time that has kind of passed where kids today, you know, their conversations about race are beyond the conversations about race and class that they're having on this show.
Yeah, I agree with Eric that it feels a little old. So the next thing that we're going to talk about, though, is something that we really love, which is the part where we have a little pool and we guess which shows we think are going to have legs and last, whether we think they're going to be good or not. It has nothing to do with enthusiasm. It's strictly cynical guessing.
And it should be noted that the bar has gotten lower and lower each year. Now we are predicting survival instead of thrival.
Yes, it's true. Well, and the unquestioned champion of this was Tanya Ballard-Brown, who used to be on this with us. She's currently on sabbatical, but she picked Scandal and all kinds of great things
she's
when they were
really
new.
Good at this.
She's awesome.
She was really good at this. I, on the other hand, picked The New Partners on CBS, which you will not remember ever existed. And Glenn picked the dinosaur show, Terra Nova.
Yes, that was dumb.
So we've had some ups and downs, but we're ready to have some ups. Mm-hmm. So we're going to guess some shows that we think are guaranteed to stick around. Now, this has to be network or cable because streaming, the same rules do not apply.
Now, this is barring any kind of weird tweets from people who star on the show, okay?
That's true.
that's my one caveat. If somebody in the cast does something crazy, I can't control
that. That's true. Like everything that goes on under our roof here at NPR HQ, it's barring news. All right. Go ahead, Glenn. What are you picking?
I have a winning strategy, as you will see. Spoiler alert, a little bit later in the show. But it was between, for me, CBS's FBI or CBS's The Code.
I sense a pattern.
They sound like they could be the same show.
Well, see, that's the thing.
They really do.
They are the same show.
CBS weeknights are where hour-long dramas go to get fallen in front of by your Aunt Trish and Uncle Jeff. Maybe they don't program their DVRs themselves. Maybe they wait for their cousin to come over and do that for them. But they are. If it's Wednesday at 9 o'clock, they are there on the couch in front of whatever the hell is on CBS. Mm-hmm. I was going to go with FBI, but it's so much in the news now that there might be some Fed fatigue. Mm-hmm. The Code has had a troubled development. It got rid of the male lead and also Mira Sorvino, who was a co-star. She's out too. Yeah. So I wasn't going to do that, but then I read the CBS description of the show, The Code. In The Code, from CBS TV Studios, right there, if they own it, and they're airing it. That's a pretty good little niche there. In The Code from CBS TV Studios, the military's brightest minds take on our country's toughest challenges inside the courtroom and out, where each attorney is trained as a prosecutor, a defense lawyer, an investigator, and a Marine.
Yes.
Boom. Boom.
That is
normcore bingo right there. That show is going to have a lab tech. They're going to be squirrely. They're going to reference World of Warcraft and or Fortnite every episode.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can...
Someone's going to die like a season and a half in.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah.
If you can fit the word that in front of the title, if you can imagine Aunt Trish going, you know what we're watching is that The Code. it's golden, I think. Yeah. That's my pick. Wow. Yeah. The Code.
Okay. Now I just have two caveats.
Uh-huh.
This is a mid-season show. And mid-season shows and CBS, for some reason, don't always mix. So that it might not survive because of that. The other show, FBI, that you were going to pick is a Dick Wolf
mm-hmm.
show created by the guy who created all the Chicago shows on NBC and Law & Order. CBS wants to be in business with Dick Wolf. And so I have a feeling they're going to do whatever it takes to make FBI succeed
yeah.
because they want to be in business with Dick Wolf. Now, the other show, The Code, was written by the guy who did the adaptation of Limitless for
uh-huh.
CBS. I don't know if they want to be in business with him as much. That's all I'm saying.
Eric, what are you picking? Guaranteed to stick around.
Mine is also a very cynical ploy. It's the Murphy Brown revival on CBS. It's the highest profile reboot that we're going to have in the fall. It's the, frankly, one of the only network TV shows I'm really excited to see.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like the timing couldn't be better for them to bring it back, given that we're talking about the relevancy of journalism and politics and a chief executive who challenges the norms of all those things. And here come the ladies who took on Dan Quayle and his nonsense about single mothers, namely Candace Bergen, the star of the show, and Diane English, the creator of the show, way back when the show was originally on. So I have high hopes for this. The only challenge might be, I'm sure it's an expensive show to
mm-hmm.
do. And if for some reason they don't manage to recapture the magic of the old show,
yeah.
it will be hard to sustain it.
Yeah. I was interested to see that their equivalent of the Fox network is the Wolf network
mm-hmm.
because Murphy Brown retains the same subtlety in those matters that it had when their version of the MTV VJ Kennedy was named McGovern.
There you go.
And
yeah.
They're not subtle with that stuff. But thank you very much, Eric. Stephen, what did you pick?
Well, I'm not sure about this show based on the trailer. I am basing this mostly on my own love of the star.
Uh-huh.
I picked Rel
uh-huh.
on Fox.
Yeah.
Rel is Lil Rel Howery, who I thought stole every scene he was in Get Out.
Sure.
A beloved film that a lot of people loved, and I think there's an enormous amount of goodwill toward that guy.
I agree.
I think he is very, very funny. He plays a divorced dad. His wife leaves him for his barber.
Yeah.
And so he sort of left in this like stripped bare apartment, and then he's kind of going forward with his life. And his dad on the show is played by Sinbad.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there is residual warm feelings towards Sinbad in the
uh-huh.
world. It's on Sunday nights on Fox. It premieres after the NFL lineup. So you're going to have a large audience kind of leading into this show.
Mm-hmm.
The trailer is not promising.
Yeah.
You know, it's got the laughy laugh after every line, most of which didn't make me laughy laugh. But at the same time, it's produced by Jared Carmichael, who did The Carmichael Show. Lil Rel Howery was on The Carmichael Show. There is some strong pedigree going
yeah.
on here. I think that Sunday night Fox lineup still has some juice to it. I think it can at least survive. And I think once you get past that pilot-itis
yeah.
that Linda described talking about a different show, I think you could get into a groove where just the natural charisma and delivery of Lil Rel Howery can start to buoy this show into something more interesting than you see in the trailer.
Yeah. Jared Carmichael is a super interesting guy with a ton of interesting ideas about comedy and a genuine like love of multi-camera comedy and wanting to make it good again.
There's a good news, bad news scenario here regarding this show, okay? The bad news is the best jokes from the pilot are in the trailer. Okay, so
okay.
it's not, you know, there's not a lot more to look forward to when you see the full pilot. But the good news is that pilots for multi-camera comedies are usually terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And they're often not a great judge on whether or not the show's going to get better. Regardless of what you think about Big Bang Theory, it is a pretty decent comedy now. And the pilot was horrible.
Horrible.
And same with Seinfeld. You know, the first four episodes of Seinfeld were terrible. So it's entirely possible, given the talent and the camaraderie and the chemistry of these producers and this crew, that they can come together and create a show that's better than the pilot. But the pilot is not good.
Yeah. I think that's a fair pick. Good job, Thompson. So,
once again, setting the bar.
All the bars are low for these things.
Old as you are, you still got a little bit left.
All right. So my pick is Legacies on the CW. It is a spinoff of The Originals, which was created originally as a spinoff of The Vampire Diaries.
Then we started calling ourselves The New Originals.
So it is a grand spinoff of Vampire Diaries. I think the fans will be around, and I think it'll survive, and that's about all I have to say.
What is it about?
It's a spinoff of The Original.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Yeah. So it says, I'm going to read to you from the...
Always a good thing.
From the authority known as the Wikipedia. Hmm. Legacies follows Hope Michelson, the tribrid daughter of Klaus Michelson and Haley Marshall, who is descended from some of the most powerful vampire, werewolf, and witch bloodlines.
There you go.
All right.
She is going to the Salvatore School for the Young and Gifted. Now, that sounds familiar to me, but we shall see.
And again, the bar here is survival to a second season.
Yeah.
The bar here is no one will bother to cancel it.
And I want to take an extremely short trip through our picks from last year, and you're going to find that we all did pretty well last year. I picked Young Sheldon, kind of a gimme.
Yeah, kind of a gimme.
Kind of a gimme, and it lasted. And Young Sheldon, some people like it. That would be my review. Eric picked SWAT.
Sure.
Also a gimme, sticking around.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, pretty
Shamar
much.
Shamar Moore.
You take Shamar Moore and you put him on a CBS Law & Order cops and action thing, of course.
My pick was SEAL Team, which I picked basically on physics. Nature abhors a vacuum. The TV grid abhors an absence of David Boreanaz.
Same.
See also Shamar Moore.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and also SEAL Team and SWAT, to me, kept being the same show in my head, so they both were picked, and they both survived. And then Stephen picked Dynasty. Good job, buddy.
Yeah, when I picked Dynasty, I did think it was going to be a little bit more of kind of a Scandal-style pulp thing that, like, people were going to be really drawn to and talk about. I don't think that's happened.
I think mine
is the worst pick of the four, and yours, Linda, is the best, albeit the most obvious.
Well, that's what they say about me, the best but the most obvious. All right. Tell us what fall television you're excited about. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH. Tweet us at PCHH. And if you like, over on NPR.org, there is a fall TV preview that Eric and Glenn and I wrote on which some of these shows appear, where we run down a total of 20 shows you might want to look out for this fall. Now, when we come back, it's going to be time to talk about what's making us happy this week. So come right back.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Zoom Video Communications. Video conferencing has changed the way we do business. Meet happy anytime, anywhere with Zoom, connecting team members across the globe. Imagine seeing up to 49 people on the screen at once in digital video. Share anything, a file, a video, a photo, via desktop, laptop, tablet, or mobile. Visit Zoom.us to set up your free account today. And meet happy with Zoom Video Communications, zoom.us. Support for this podcast and the following message come from RX Bar. RX Bar believes in the power of transparency with all of the core ingredients listed on the front packaging. With 14 different flavor varieties, RX Bars are gluten-free, soy-free, and dairy-free, and contain no artificial colors, flavors, preservatives, or fillers. You can take them on the go. Get 25% off your first order at checkout when you visit rxbar.com/popculture and use promo code popculture at checkout.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It is time for our favorite segment of this week and every week. What is making us happy this week? Stephen Thompson, what is making you happy this week, buddy?
Well, in the entire remainder of the show, we talked about new fall television. I have been digging into a piece of new summer television, Disenchantment, also on Netflix. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Now, Disenchantment is the new show created by Matt Groening, obviously Simpsons, obviously Futurama. This is a 10-episode run on Netflix with a new cast of characters, albeit a very familiar a very familiar setup. Now, I would describe this show as Byzantine but familiar. A hard-drinking princess, Bean, played by Abby Jacobson from Broad City, goes through adventures with an elf sidekick played by Nat Faxon and her personal demon, a little demon played by Eric Andre. We talked earlier in this episode about pilotitis. I think the pilot of this show really takes a while to get off the ground, but I also felt that was true with Futurama. And what I'm finding with this show as I'm going through it, as it gets its legs under it, I'm finding not only echoes of Futurama, a show that I really love.
A lot of echoes of Futurama.
A lot of echoes. I think more of Futurama than The Simpsons.
Much.
Characters map fairly cleanly between those two shows. But I'm digging into this world a little bit more, the visual imagination of this show. There are jokes tucked into almost every frame of this show. And then that voice cast, not only the stars, but then all through the margins, you have voices that you've heard so many times on these other Matt Groening shows. Again, especially Futurama. Maurice LaMarche, Tress MacNeille, Billy West, John DiMaggio, Sharon Horgan pops up on this show. So I've been digging it more as it goes along. And I'm all for anything that gives me kind of a little bit of that Futurama kick. I really think, especially if as this show gets another season and they've kind of established who all the characters are and where they are, it can really take off the way these other shows have.
Yeah, they only gave the first seven episodes of that show to critics to review, and I kept wondering why it wasn't more joke dense and why they were leaning into the story of it so hard. And then the last three episodes, all of the heart that's missing from the early going on.
It's a little more caustic, this one.
Because it's on Netflix, it can be a little bit more, a lot more violent. It can have language. It can just be generally darker. And it's in those last three episodes where everything kind of course corrects in a big way. So, yeah, I wouldn't necessarily have kept going if I didn't have to, but it's great.
That's the thing. I think this is a show, if you are interested in these creators, if you are interested in this world, stick with it.
All right. Thank you very much, Stephen Thompson. Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy this week?
I have become obsessed with a mobile game that is tied to the recent Teen Titans Go to the Movies film, which I loved. The game is actually the second version. It goes by the name Teeny Titans 2 or Teen Titans Go Figure. It's called Go Figure because the conceit of the game is that you pick which Teen Titan you want to be. I chose Raven because internal consistency, who collects tiny cartoony figurines of various superheroes and supervillains that look like little bobbleheads, basically, and you putter around your home city and Gotham and Metropolis, and your figures battle against their figures. So it has a Pokemon light aspect to it because mystical figures can beat super figures, and super figures can beat gadget-based figures. And the character design, both how they look and how they play, is just so faithful to some deep, deep, deep bench DC Comics characters. And the sensibility is right from the show and from the movie. It's funny. It's very nerdy. My favorite thing about the game, though, is that when your superhero or supervillain is victorious in battle, he or she does a little victory dance. And there's something like 93 characters to collect, and most of them do different dances. But if you get very good at the game, and I am very good at the game, you will eventually get a Wonder Woman figure. And her victory dance choreography is, of course, Beyoncé's All the Single Ladies.
Oh, sure.
This game gets it. It is just incredibly addictive. So that's a Teen Titans Go Figure.
All right. Thank you very much, Glenn Weldon. Eric Deggans, what is making you happy this week?
Okay. I mentioned one of those things, which is Starz docuseries America to Me, where Steve James, the guy who directed Hoop Dreams, followed 12 kids of color, mostly of color, who are in this middle class high school in Oak Park, Illinois. And for some reason, even though this is a school that has all kinds of resources and most of the kids who go there are middle class, the black kids are underperforming the white kids and have been for many years. And so he hangs out with them and tries to find out basically what's going on here. Why is race still this subject that they can't talk about, that the administrators don't seem to want to deal with, in a place that is known for its liberalism and is proud of its diversity and resisted white flight and came up with ways to alter its housing rules so that white people wouldn't leave when black people started moving in. But for some reason, they still can't close the achievement gap. And this show sort of delves into it, and you get to see high school kids dating, you know, all the things about that age that are precious and compelling, but you also get some really straight talk about race and how it works in modern society. So that's one thing. The other thing I'm going to say is I am digging these movies that are putting the lie to all this crap we've heard about how movies and TV shows centered on non-white cast can't perform. Crazy Rich Asians, once again, has done really well in the box office, putting the line to this idea that a movie featuring an almost all Asian American cast can't perform. Black Panther crossed the $700 million revenue mark in the U.S. also recently. I'm just tired of all these platitudes, and I hear them from media buyers all the time. Well, you know, will this show starring a black person perform overseas? You know, will people in China want to go see it? Can white people identify with characters of color? We've known for many years that all this stuff is nonsense, but now at the top of the box office, it's just smacking people in the head. Throw out all these ideas about what works in a movie and what doesn't commercially, particularly as it regards race.
Thank you very much, Eric Deggans. Could not agree more. What is making me happy this week is the opportunity to remember the work of Neil Simon, the playwright who died this weekend. And he wrote everything from The Odd Couple to Barefoot in the Park and Plaza Suite, and it goes on and on and on and on. But for me, my earliest exposure to Neil Simon was related to my love of romantic comedy, which is the film The Goodbye Girl, which I have not talked about nearly enough on this show because it is one of my favorites. It was Richard Dreyfuss and Marsha Mason in a story about a woman who is left by her jerk actor boyfriend. And not only does he leave, but he sublets the apartment that they have lived in together with her daughter. So now she has nowhere to live, and somebody shows up saying, I've got a key, and it's Richard Dreyfuss. So, of course, they wind up sharing the apartment. It has many very traditional romantic comedy elements. They fight, they bicker, they then sort of have moments. It's incredibly charming, but it has this Neil Simon kind of rhythm to it that I think is just wonderful. And if you have not ever sought it out, seek out The Goodbye Girl. It has a sort of an unusual dynamic between them. He is an unusual romantic lead in some ways. They're both really funny in it. Quinn Cummings, who you might know as a writer, plays the little daughter, and she's wonderful. It's one of my favorite little kid performances ever. So many fond memories to Neil Simon, and watch The Goodbye Girl, and that is what is making me happy this week, is quoting it back and forth with people who love it as much as I do.
I don't like the panties hanging on the rod, for example.
Very good.
Oh, that's awesome.
Very good. I sleep in the nude. A buffo. That's the one my sister and I like the best. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can find all of us on Twitter. You can find me at Linda Holmes. You can find Steven at I Dislike Steven. You can find Glenn at G.H. Weldon and Eric at Deggans. You can find our producer, Jessica Reedy, at Jessica_Reedy. Our producer, Vincent Accavino, at V. Accavino, and our producer emeritus and music director, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in and out music, which you are bobbing your head to right now. Thanks to all of you guys for being here.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening. And if you have a second and you're so inclined, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts. That will help more people find this show. We will see you all right back here next week.
This is Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. The Emmy Awards are coming up, so this week, we're listening back to interviews with some nominees and people whose shows are nominated, like Issa Rae, Jake Tapper, Brian Tyree Henry, Tim Gunn, and Stephen Colbert. So check out this week's Emmy series on Fresh Air.